Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to this Baseball America Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. All of our podcasts and Facebook Live broadcasts are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. Shop now at Baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. Visit Baseballism.com for hats, shirts, and much more today. I'm John Manuel, joined by Kyle Glazer. At some point, J.J. Cooper will bust in and make his presence known. Kyle, we've got two championship series going. We've got two 2-0 championship series going. Astros up 2-0 on the Yankees. Okay. We've got the Dodgers two games up on the Cubs. And we had a couple of rarities, I guess, this weekend. I'm not sure how rare those two things are, but we had the first walk-off home run for a Dodger postseason player in 29 years, the last one fairly famous. And we had a complete game in a Major League playoff game. Which one shocked you more, the Justin Turner walk-off off John Lackey face or Justin Verlander going 9 for the Astros?
I don't know if shocked is the right word, because you knew each player was capable of doing these things. I think just by the nature of today's game, Verlander going the complete game, not that I would have put it past him, right, but just we see so few guys get the chance to do that, even if they are rolling. My natural inclination would have been, if you told me someone's going to hit a walk-off and someone's going to pitch a complete game, I would have put the walk-off as a higher probability.
That's a good way to put it. The amazing thing to me is that the Astros and Cubs are certainly thought of as very analytically inclined clubs. And both of them did things that the analytics would say, don't do that, you know? The complete game, how many times through the lineup did Verlander go? 3 or 4, I forget.
I think it was 4.
That was 4. 124 pitches. The analytics would probably tell you, do not do that. Even though they wanted to give Ken Giles rest too. And so I understand that. The rest of their bullpen. So these two teams, the Cubs and the Astros, in different positions with their bullpens, I think, a little constricted right now. And the Astros seems like it's more like, okay, we're not 100% sure about all of our setup guys. They have a lot of faith in Ken Giles. Joe Maddon, meanwhile, is like, Wade Davis is over there, and, you know, I'd like him to get a save, not come in here when the game is tied. So that seemed like he tied his own hands behind his back, as opposed to the Astros just seemingly making a choice of, we wanted Verlander to be the bridge to Giles, period.
You know, the thing is, these one-size-fit-all rules with some of the analytics don't always pan out. You got to remember, Justin Verlander, yes, generally speaking, starting pitchers that third, fourth time through the order, they, you know, are less effective. Justin Verlander isn't one of those guys. John Smoltz talked about on the broadcast, his average allowed the second time through the order is the exact same as the third time, is as good as the second time.
And he's always been a guy who, you see the 99s later in the game more than early,
so,
which
know,
is always so one of the reasons I love
Verlander. You have to understand that the analytics apply a lot of times generally, but there are always exceptions. You have to look at the player individually, and I think that's where sometimes it gets lost. The fact that Justin Verlander was pumping strong, and he's okay. He's one of those few select special guys who can go 100, 110, 120, and not lose his effectiveness. And we've seen him do it throughout his career.
No,
it's not like he's a guy that's a five-inning guy who just had the game of his life. I mean, it was an incredible game. But again, he's, you know, a borderline Hall of Fame candidate. I would say he is a Hall of Fame candidate. So
I would actually say that he's more than a candidate. I think, and that's the thing to me.
I would vote for him. No question.
I think that's actually kind of a direction I wanted to go in. Yeah, he's 34 years old, so he's got, who knows how many more years he's got left. His contract runs through 2019. I think he'll probably pitch more than 2 more years. You know, we'll see kind of how he adjusts as a pitcher once he loses his velocity. He certainly hasn't lost it yet at this point.
It looked like he did at one point, and then he got it back.
Right, so that he was done in like 2014 and 15. 2014, he had the 450 ERA. 2015, only made 20 starts. He's roared back the last two seasons. And J.J. Cooper and I had this preseason debate. Who would you rather have for the next couple of years? Would you rather have Sale? Would you rather have Verlander? Certainly, Sale's younger, and I think Chris Sale had a better regular season. Justin Verlander's starting to make my case look pretty good since he got to September, since he got to the Astros. Won five regular season decisions with a 106 ERA, and has been a very interesting postseason for him. He didn't pitch great against the Red Sox. Obviously, was straight fire against the Yankees. And Kyle, this has been a fascinating series to me. So low scoring, so tense these first two games, both 2-1 for the Astros. And the difference so far, besides, because both teams have pitched well, because of the difference so far has been the Astros' athleticism, both on the defensive end, but especially running the bases, and with Baseball America's Major League Player of the Year, Jose Altuve, really showing the way. I mean, you just don't see dudes score from first on balls that don't get to the wall very often, like he did in that crucial game one.
Athleticism, speed, and fundamentals. We've talked about this again and again and again and again. The team that makes the fewest mistakes win. It's not as simple as, oh, this pitcher's better than this pitcher, so this guy should
win. Unless you're the Nationals, where the Cubs made all kinds of mistakes and the Nationals still couldn't capitalize.
Right. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's been written about the Astros. It's been tight turns on the bases. It's been, the relays have been picturesque. Yeah. I mean, you
the
talk
throw
about
by Marwin Gonzalez from left field.
A baseball pure baseball standpoint, that's as gorgeous as any home run that's been hit this postseason.
I agree.
What the Astros have been able to do. So they're athletic. They're incredibly quick, just as a team, everything they do. But it's also precise.
Yeah.
And you compare it to the Yankees.
Execution.
And you compare it to the Yankees, where the little things, whether it's, Judge maybe not getting the ball in as quickly as he should. Didi did get hit a little bit by Correa, but he also kind of had his back turned. It wasn't the cleanest relay going in. Gary Sanchez obviously not handling it.
Yeah, he's kind of set up. He took the relay right next to the bag.
Right. It's not. Now, some of that is you probably didn't expect Altuve to go, so you have to adjust a little bit. But those little things, and not to, Brett Gardner getting thrown out third base, and he even admitted he didn't hit the bag as quickly, as tightly as he should have. Those little things add up, especially when you've got guys like Dallas Keuchel and Justin Verlander on the mound.
Yeah.
All those fundamental things. And on top of it, the Yankees have struck out 34.2% of their plate appearances, not counting the wildcard game, the ALDS and the ALCS. 34.2% as a team.
It's incredible.
If you don't put the ball in play, and the team on the other side is playing cleaner fundamental baseball than you are, plus you're on the road,
right?
You're not going to win.
And the Yankees despite those things, have been in both games, have had chances to win.
Which is a testament to their pitching staff, which has done an excellent job.
Their pitching has been outstanding, and they do have, in my mind, you go to Game 3, they have the advantage on the mound. They have Sabathia versus Charlie Morton. That's your Game 3 matchup. I'd rather have Sabathia. I mean, he's been, speaking of Hall of Famers.
Agreed.
To me, you look at 21st century starting pitching, you can't get more than five deep, for me, career-wise, without getting to CeCe. Another guy who was a Baseball America Major League Player of the Year back in 2008, when we really just like said, there are other great players who had great years. This guy put the Milwaukee Brewers on his back and carried him over the finish line, and he was our Major League Player of the Year.
Absolutely.
So maybe we went a little narrative that year, but I don't think we went narrative with Jose Altuve this year. I think we had a ton of good candidates. But Altuve just kind of, again, showing it to me in those first two games. Like you said, the precision. And he was the most valuable player, like the most player with the most who directly contributed the most to the Astros' success this year. I still don't think he's their best player. I think that's Carlos Correa. I just love Carlos Correa. First time you see Aroldis Chapman, first time I think he said he's faced him in his whole career, and swings. I think he fouled off the first pitch, maybe swung and missed, and he said after the game, "Well, I need to get on top of that fastball." So then I just serve one right center field. It's like, I need to get on top of that 100-plus mile an hour fastball.
Hey, it was only 99.
I'll just do it. I mean, it's just unbelievable how easy he makes baseball look. And that was really the first significant decision of Jeff Luhnow's administration in 2012. 2012 draft had some pretty good dudes in it. But at the top of the draft, number one prospect for us was Byron Buxton. And you look at Byron Buxton and you say, he plays now. Took him a little while to get there. But you see number one overall pick tools. You see number one top 100 prospect tools. and the performance started to match it this year. But Carlos Correa, who signed for less, was the absolute right choice at the time. And that
No question.
That was the first choice that the Luno administration had to make. Bobby Heck was assistant GM and in charge of the draft that year, along with Mike Elias, who's now assistant GM. So it was a team decision to execute that draft. And they went Correa, they got Lance McCullers Jr., Rio Ruiz. That draft, they've had some hiccups in the past since then. And there was clearly some pieces to this Astros team that were there before the Luno administration. Keuchel and Altuve and Springer were all acquired pre-Luno. But that was their first decision. That's about as that's like a Joey Gallo home run. It is long, it is deep, it is majestic, and it is no doubt. So there are people in the industry, I still hear it, Kyle, who don't love the Astros front office. I would say I used to count myself in that category, but that team is just fairly impeccably constructed. They are a really fun team to watch, even when the Yankees are stifling the league's best offense because of all the things you said. Because they're not just a one-note team. They're not just shifts. They're not just this or that. You can't really just put them in any one category. They can do a lot of things really, really well. And they're just, on top of it, they're really talented.
And a lot of that, too, coaching staff. Give AJ Hinch and his staff credit.
Absolutely.
They talked a little about, they do, you know, they call it the routine maintenance, the every 3,000 miles. And it's kind of funny to me how many fans out there, and it's generally people who haven't played the game, assume, oh, these are big leaguers. They don't need to take infield. They don't need to, you know, work on their relays. They absolutely do. Like any other human being, if you stop practicing a skill, you're going to be rusty at it.
And only people I know who think that seem to be writers, not... I don't think that, fans think that. I really don't.
I've come across a few. I don't know, maybe...
Well, they read the wrong writers.
Probably. It's a situation where... But every team that goes out and says, we're going to emphasize this and focus on it. You know, BP and our practice, this isn't just going to be BP at 50%, take a few grounders off of fungos that are coming off, you know, nice and soft. That's not what they do. AJ Hinch talked about this. They go in, they work on this stuff, so when it comes up in a big situation, it's automatic.
Player development has to continue at the major league level, and the Astros are a great example of that. We mentioned Marwin Gonzalez. Again, Jose Altuve did not come to the major leagues fully formed. It's a 200-hit machine. His first year was solid. His second year in the major leagues wasn't as good as his rookie year. He continues to make the adjustments. He continues to get better. I would say that's true of even some of their older players, like a Josh Reddick. I think he just got better. I mean, I think he was a good free agent signing. He was a good player before. He got better. Speaking of analytically inclined front offices, the Dodgers, 2-0. Kyle, we talked down the stretch in September about the Dodgers' struggles and just that long losing streak. What it was, 15 out of 16?
16 of 17.
16 of 17. What was broken? What could they do to fix it? Here they're playing against the Cubs without Corey Seager, jammed, slid into a base hard in the last game of the division series, and
the plate hurt his back. His back.
Yeah, yeah, and they had extra time off. He got an epidural. I mean, Corey Seager, a very important player to me, gave North Carolina a shortstop for its future North Carolina World Baseball Classic team when the United States dissolves into 50 different parts. So we needed a shortstop. So this is not optimal. Things were not setting up optimally for the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw gave up 4 home runs in his first playoff start. Barely got through 5 innings in his second playoff start, and yet they're 2-0. And they have, I will say, the Dodgers, again, pretty complete roster is what we're seeing, number one. Number two, Kenley Jansen. I mean, I think we already knew what a monster this guy was, but he's ridiculously
good. There's some certain guys in baseball that you know how good they are. They still make your jaws drop. He's one of them.
He is one of them.
I mean, and that probably his cutters last year were more 97. This year he's down to 94, 95. Guess what? Doesn't matter. The pitch is still unhittable. I mean, this is a team. And this is, we talked about during the summer, you and I had some debates on our Facebook Lives about, you said, the Nats, I think the Nats are a better team, line up with them. And I agree that if you kind of did it, okay, this guy versus this guy, this guy versus this guy. But being our West Coast guy here and watching the Dodgers extensively and just watching the flow when they were going, there was something complete. Just everything worked for them. The guys who were stepping up and making big contributions, even if they weren't the guys you expected, it continually kept happening. So for me, that's what made them the best team and the team that I thought was going to be, the team that got to the World Series. They went through that slump. We talked about part of the reason was they were playing their JV guys a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But for this right here, for Corey Seager to go be off the NLCS roster completely, And like you said, for Kershaw not to go out and be himself.
Right.
I mean, these are huge, huge wins for the Dodgers. And again, it's different guys contributing different nights. You know, Chris Taylor and Yasiel Puig 2 nights ago, Justin Turner last night.
Right.
And to me, what really set the tone, and this is, you know, on record, you can go back and listen to this. When Justin Turner hit that home run in game one of the NLDS against Taijuan Walker, that to me was, they're going to roll. Because mm-hmm. the team goes as he goes. There were nerves. As soon as he did that, you could see they were going to play loose. They're like, all right, we got this. And when that clicked for the Dodgers, look, they're undefeated in the postseason.
Right. And they're playing good teams. Arizona and Chicago are good teams.
And, you know, are they going to, you know, run completely unbeaten through the postseason? Odds are against it. But I really like how they match up now with Yu Darvish and Alex Wood. They did a nice job extending this rotation. You know, mm-hmm. last year or 2 years ago, it would have been crud. We have to throw Scott Kazmir, Brandon McCarthy, or Hyunjin Ryu. It's right. not. It's, you know, this is as good a team as the Dodgers have had during this stretch of five straight division titles.
I would agree.
This is the health. You know, well, it was the healthiest. Then Seager going down is a problem. But at least on the pitching side, it has been. They're in great shape, and I think that they're pouncing on opponents' mistakes and their opponents' weaknesses. The Cubs bullpen, we talked about this.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, it was going to be a weak point coming out of the NLDS, and it's not like it was its strongest point anyway.
Right. It was the weakest point of their team last year when they won the World Series, which is the depth of their bullpen, and I would say it's the weakest point of their team during the regular season this year.
And obviously, and that's part of the reason now, we can get deeper into this. You know, they bring in John Lackey there. There's a lot of reasons I don't like that decision. There is also that, you know, got to take into account, they're short on bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have that perfect bridge guy, awesome, great. But bringing in the starter who's never relieved before, back-to-back days, in the middle of the inning, like, there's three levels of badness there.
That is the amazing part. You just hit on every single one. Meanwhile, the body they did have, who was rested, was Wade Davis. You have a day off the next day. He didn't pitch in game one. He has yet to appear in this series.
And that is
really stunning. You can't go back home down 2-0. Why is Wade Davis not in the game? I really don't see any logical reason. J.J. Cooper.
Why is Wade Davis not in the game? Why is Brian Dunsing in the game?
Because Brian Dunsing's been good.
Dunsing pitched well.
He shouldn't have started the inning, but why was John Lackey, you just said, starting pitcher coming in relief, back-to-back days, and coming in the middle of the inning. All those things are reasons not to use John Lackey. I mean, Joe Maddon just... So it seems like Joe Maddon like did that almost... It's almost like his contrarian impulse just had to be assuaged. I must do the thing. I'm going to be the one to thread this needle. I really can't think of another reason. Either that or John Lackey said, I'm going to kick your butt after this game if you don't pitch.
The only other thing I can think of that would make any sense is if Wade Davis went to Joe Maddon's office and said, Skip, those three or four innings, that long outing I had in D.C., my arm's feeling tender. I'll give it a go if I can, but I'm not feeling 100%. And that's a conversation between him and Maddon. If that's a conversation that took place and we just, the general public, doesn't know about it, fine, whatever. But short of that, you know, when John Lackey is the option that you have otherwise. Because, again, it goes back to who else you got. You know, everyone was screwing up Buck Showalter and Ubaldo Jimenez and not using Britton last year. I didn't have a problem with it when he went with, Darren O'Day and Brad Brack, too.
Other guys who were good. Yes.
Really good players. And even Dunsing, to a degree, was okay. It's when you went with Ubaldo Jimenez.
Exactly.
Over Zach Britton.
Right. There are arguments for those other relievers over a tired reliever or those kind of things.
Right. Similar to this. You know, Dunsing pitched okay. I'm not
guys
mad
doing
at that.
The guys doing the jobs they normally do.
Right. This however, was, for the reasons I've stated, extraordinarily questionable. And again,
curious.
If Wade Davis went in and told Maddon, my arm's tender, I'm not feeling great, fine, okay, maybe that's the backstory. But short of that, you can't have that happen.
Which I'll say, if that's the case, then it is Joe Maddon's job to wear it. Like, that's why you get paid the money to manage, is to basically, the same way that Dusty got in trouble, which really came down to, no, if Strasburg tells me he can't go, I'll wear it, instead of him, even if it makes it seem like that I completely don't have any clue what's going on. That is something a manager's job to do, but you do look at it now, and the other part of it is that, I mean, I know y'all probably talked about this already, but Red Turner.
Yes, no, we started talking about this, the fact that he is, and as Kyle said, he is the heart of that team. And, you know, the fact that you have a guy, I think this matters a lot more to fans than it matters to other people, and it certainly matters to writers. But you have a guy who could say, yeah, I was 4 years old in my grandma's house watching Kirk Gibson. You know, it's my earliest baseball memory. The guy's a Dodger fan, you know, grew up, you know, Southern California baseball guy, a Fullerton guy, won a national championship there.
Mayfair High in Lakewood.
And now to come up and, you know, do it for the Dodgers. I mean, I think people know, people who listen to this podcast know his story. That doesn't make any less remarkable or any less good of a story, JJ, because to me, on a team with a lot of other higher-priced or higher-profile guys, Kyle already said it, he is the heart and soul of that team, and the home run he hit off Walker in the first game of the Arizona series, I think Kyle's right, that really did seem like it just set the Dodgers up and just put everyone at ease. All right, let's follow this guy who we already follow.
It does, and you also have to credit a guy. We have the two unlikely stars. You have him and you have Altuve in the American League Series. You have, you know, Turner. These middle infielders who really no one would have, when they were signed, when they were drafted. I mean, the Reds, it was a great draft pick. Clearly, you know, no one at the time, they thought, the guys, I did the Reds list back then.
Yeah.
The guys in the Reds organization who really liked Turner thought that he was a big leaguer. That no one, if you just said, well, I'm going to project that he'll be one of the, you know, better power hitters in the league. And he'll be, right, you know, like a cornerstone middle of the, you know, lineup kind of guy with some, you know, earlier in his career, some defensive versatility to go with it. Yeah, there was no, I mean, clearly, no one with the Reds, no one with the Mets.
No one with the Orioles.
And no one, you know, with the Orioles. And I would even wager no one with the Dodgers when they acquired him. No one was saying, this is this guy. But he also is, this goes back to hitting, what the advances we've seen as far as the scientific approach to hitting. You know, guys have always tweaked stances and all that. But Justin Turner is a different hitter now than he was when he was coming up in the minors. And he's turned himself into a vastly superior hitter to what he used to be.
Over the last 4 years, you know, all the pick whatever stat you want to pick, he's one of the top five third basemen. And basically, it's Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado, and Justin Turner is up there in that,
right,
with those
in the
group
Longoria
of guys.
Group, I mean, but the guys who are more, who were more was expected of. Yeah, you know, Evan Longoria was the third overall pick in a draft, and immediate star. And drafted around the same time, you know, Turner was a college pick in 2006. He was picked twice. He was eligible, unsigned, as a 29th round pick of the Yankees. I'm sure there's a Yankees blog that has written about that.
And the Angels drafted him out of high school.
They did, in the 8th round. I didn't realize he was drafted that high. I do like this line from our 2005 draft scouting report. One scout compared Turner favorably with Red Sox prospect Dustin Pedroia. Like Pedroia, makes all the plays defensively, even at short, thanks to superior footwork and profiles as an above-average defender on the right side of the infield, thanks to his fringy arm, average runner with excellent instincts. He definitely had the instincts, but again, and he had a steady, gritty career, saved his best for last, slugged 500 in his last year at Fullerton. But still, no one saw this power coming, and he did it. You know, this is not a guy who just, you look at him and say, oh man, of course, you look at Yasiel Puig, and you're like, yes, I understand that when you hit the ball a mile high, you're going to bat flip a little bit and expect it to get out even when it walked.
No.
I did love Puig and Keith Olbermann going
Puig
back.
Puig is explained. No. I bat flip the singles and doubles. The homers, no need to bat.
That was just a bat toss. It wasn't a flip. It was the toss. I did like a, I'm done with you, bat, you know. That was a fun repartee with him.
And, no question.
Self-proclaimed policeman of all baseball history, Keith Olbermann. So I enjoyed that. I'm on Team Puig for that, despite the hair. Whose hair is worse? Red Turner's or Puig's? Or I guess you guys can say better.
I mean, Turner's is it's pretty nasty.
I have to find this tweet now where someone compared his hair to a homeless man at Bonnaroo, I think is what it was. And yet that guy likes the, because I think I just tweeted that he's as good a player as his beard is bad, which, you know, people seem to like his beard. I think I called it a homeless beard, and a Johnny Morrell said, shout out to homeless beard after the home run.
Johnny Morrell, Angels prospect, Johnny Morrell?
No, it's Ajani Morrell.
Oh, okay.
A-J-A-N-N-I.
So got it.
On the Twitter machine, gave me the shout out. And I, you know, to me, I just don't remember a player with that kind of facial hair as a professional athlete.
I was going to say, at least not Narda. Maybe back in the Irish, you know, the Irish of the late 1890s, early 1900s.
No, I think it was,
but that was more mustache.
Yeah, exactly. It was like up here, but it wasn't down below the beard line. So,
hey, you know what? If you're going to, you know, it's kind of become his thing a little bit. I hit big pull side home runs, and I have a big mangy red beard, though this one's straight center field.
That one was just dead center, but it was a lackey 92 mile an hour fastball center cut.
I mean, that was, you saw the pitch on replay too with the strike something. I mean, that's, Justin Turner's not going to miss that. Very few major league hitters are going to miss that, especially him. Shout out to the fan in center field who made the catch the railing.
It was a nice catch. So, Kyle, going forward, I mean, these two 2-0 teams, prohibitive favorites? Is there a scenario where you see the Cubs winning 4 or 5 from the Dodgers or the Yankees winning 4 or 5 from the Astros?
I don't see it with the Cubs. They're tired. The Dodgers are just the better team.
I think that's correct.
The Astros, and again, this is me being the Astros doubter because of my issues with the back end of their pitching staff a little bit, and I wear it, I own it, that I'm still picking the Astros to win this thing. If you were to, I would not be shocked in the least if the Yankees come out to that bandbox that is Yankee Stadium and take Morton and Brad Peacock to the woodshed and hit, you know, two low-line drives that scrape over the wall in right field, and then a glorified fly ball that just kind of falls in that short little area in left.
Yeah.
That would not shock me at all. To me, the Dodgers should wrap this up before they get back to LA.
It's just gross to me that the new Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, I mean, like two iterations ago, which I never went to, that was renovated when I was 3 years old. So to the older fans, sorry, I really have no. But when the monuments were in play, that's kind of stupid when you think about it.
Oh, it's crazy. It's kind of funny to watch old video of.
Right. But I mean, you look at the old, but even so, the modern Yankee Stadium 2, that ballpark, it was short and right field, but it played fairer.
No, this is ridiculous.
The new one's just kind of like, how can baseball's showplace, flagship franchise, most storied franchise, just give away home runs like they're candy? It bothers me, probably more than it should. But you know what? There are a lot of ballparks today that give away home runs like candy.
Philadelphia, that short right field. I mean, Citizens Bank to me is equally as bad, though. At least their walls a little bit higher out there.
Yeah, well, Camden Yards, started this kind of trend 25 years ago. Started a lot of good trends, but that's one that was not as good. So I'm with you. I think the Yankees have a better chance to come back because they've pitched so well, and they have things they can do better. And at some point, you figure, especially in their ballpark, Judge and or Sanchez, we'll get into one, but Judge has not been, he's contributed the most to that 34% swing and miss rate.
It hasn't been good.
One of the other early moves of the Luno administration was Brent Strom, who was the minor league pitching coordinator at the time for the Cardinals, coming over as the major league pitching coach for the Astros. If you were going to pick one person out of the Cardinal system that you could bring with you, Jeff Luno, I think he picked really two or three significant ones. I think Elias came with him, Sig Megdahl, and then Brent Strom. He chose wisely. I don't mean to sound like the old dude in Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Last Crusade. I guess actually I do. Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. I love that movie. I know the first one was great. For some reason, I prefer the third. I guess it's just Sean Connery. And I also love that line, you chose poorly.
Absolutely. It's a classic.
It's classic. And he chose wisely when he went and got those guys. So I will see if the Astros and Dodgers continue to choose wisely. We'll have much more, obviously, all week. Many more podcasts to come here at BaseballAmerica.com. So we want to thank everyone for listening today. Today's podcast was sponsored by Baseballism. Don't forget to shop now at Baseballism.com and enter the offer code BASHIP to receive free shipping on your order. Visit Baseballism.com to shop for hats, shirts, and more today. We'll be back tomorrow with another Baseball America postseason podcast. For J.J. Cooper and Kyle Glazer, I'm John Manuel. See you tomorrow. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.